You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family.
This call may be recorded or transcribed.
Sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. Good morning, African world. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi, Hotep family. Hope everything was well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good day and a great weekend. Hope you're going to get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. Hoping to, the weather will be accommodating for you to do. But of course, if it is not, and you know it's got to get done, you're going to get it done. That's the kind of brother and sister that you is. And that's why we have much love and respect for you. Keep on getting it done. You're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast programs. Click on that. The drop down, the first thing you see is African Perspectives. Click on that, and then there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Thursdays, last night from 8 to 10, the Black Liberation Movement, Mississippi on the Move, with Brother Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club. Tonight at 8 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Tomorrow night from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council with Dr. Janine. On Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, family, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Also, too, if you want to use the shortcut to get to the programs that we have, just go to any search engine that you use and then put in the search babaoshi.net, BABAOSHI.net. And once again, there'll be programs that are dated in title. We got to get the new ones up. Talk with Brother Kwaku. Get the new one, the new programs up, and much more. Man, I tell you. We're going to go right to the Inyasasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. We're talking today, once again, a part two of the UK riots and a number of things to play for you, read for you, and so forth on the UK riots. And then we'll be asking you your African perspective of what's happening with the UK riots, huh? Michelle. Remember, today we read three. We read August 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. August 22nd. The fact is that black men are addicted to white women. And the results have been a kind of cultural diabetes. The union, temporary or permanent, of a black man and a white woman is a source of severe sickness of both parties involved. Because their union means that either they have fallen naively in love and are willing to brave whatever forms and storms as a testament of their love for one another, or they genuinely believe that bullshit pitch about America being a democracy with every man having the right for the pursuit of happiness, or they feel that by marrying into the opposite culture, they can better help things. Or they are completely ignorant of the history of this republic. I maintain they are completely ignorant of the history of this republic. But you know, they're not really, they just simply want to ignore it. They know it. They know how it has impacted them. And further down with these, with the Inyasasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought, we'll talk even more about that. They are completely ignorant of the history of this republic. Sterling Plum. Thank you, Brother Sterling. Your loyalty is to the person with whom you sleep. Let me repeat. Your loyalty is to the person with whom you sleep. Therefore, if you sleep with the enemy, your loyalty is to the enemy. In other words, if you sleep with the enemy, you are the enemy. It makes no difference what you say or how profoundly or eloquently you say it, what you have read, heard, or think you know, or how conspicuously you wear the trinkets or garb. If you are sleeping with the enemy, then you do not know that we are at war, at least not in any meaningful, ancestrally connected, conscious, intelligent, revolutionary, non-treasonous, visionary, sovereignty-seeking, active, African-centered, culture-first sense. If you did, then you would not be sleeping with the enemy, period. It is not complicated. Loving Urugu's trash is self-evident proof that you love Urugu. Again, if you sleep with the enemy, you are the enemy. In the same way as it is said that living by the sword will bring you death by the sword. If you sleep with evil, you die with evil. Affirm, I am not a trash collector. Affirm, I'm not a trash collector. August 23rd. A man thinks when he is alone. Yambo Olagomi. Some assume that there is self-esteem issues when silence prevails for a person, but they know not the quietude found in thoughtful hearts. The same esteem of those who honor their silence is safe, hidden from the noisy view of merchants and saboteurs and far beyond their imaginations. Even those confidants, quiet contemplators, value and hold dear, who know their pain and peace can enter only so far before rested. Introversion is nothing negative, and to varying degrees, introverts are in love with thoughts, with images of a reality they feel compelled to change and a world they need to build on top of it. True introverts are not selfish or antisocial. They consider all. They feel deeper. And this is a great task. Conditions, situations, and awareness can dictate not only thinking alone, but, when necessary, acting alone as well. Whether a function of having no other warriors in the vicinity or because they are surrounded by cowards, African warriorhood was, is, and will always be measured by an individual's ability to spiritually, psychologically, and socially stand alone in ancestral, universal truth and without the approval of others. A warrior can stand alone. Ashe. Affirm, I make the time to think. Affirm, I make the time to think. August 24th. I would rather die on my legs than to live on my knees. Didan Kamathi. Urugu understands that when it comes to making the African family more vulnerable to genocidal process, not only do you have to get the man out of the house, you have to get the man out of the man. And effeminization is the ultimate process by which this is done. For such males come to the conclusion that being effeminate is the safest way to survive and, in fact, profit from the anti-African violence of Urugu's world. Effeminates do not have to be emasculated. They are Urugu's eunuchs. Superlative models of emasculation, wholly ill-prepared for either mental or physical battle. Effeminacy among African males is the manifestation of a much deeper social mental illness that has fully corrupted the individual's soul. To effeminize means to take someone who is or would be masculine and turn them feminine, Remember that effeminization is a process. The suffix is ization. Ization. And ization means is occurring. Effeminization is the process of making what otherwise is not feminine or is a balance of the masculine and the feminine with the dominant masculine component wholly feminized. To become effectively effeminized, an African male must accept as an impossibility any valiant African-centered definition of manhood. Vanquishment must become internalized. Here we are talking about the result of a process that makes being masculine for African males an undesirable condition. African manhood becomes questionable because it is perceived as unrealistic, unattainable, and especially life-threatening. Affirm, I live standing, ashe. Affirm, I live standing. Brothers and sisters, the Inya Sisim of daily revolutionary thought. The Inya Sisim of daily revolutionary thought. Family, number of things we're going to do today. We're going to continue the conversation of what's happening in the UK. The riots in the UK, which of course didn't get, I mean, if you go now to various other sources, not network television, not even the news outlets, I haven't seen anything on MSNBC. I don't watch Fox at all. But MSNBC, CNN, whatever. And of course, the major networks, ABC, NBC, CBS. And once again, I don't watch Fox at all, except when Fox Sports comes on. When Fox Sports comes on. But there's a few things that I definitely want to play for you. And because this is serious. Serious. One of the things that happened in this situation was the identity of the person who stabbed those three little girls. You know, and so I want to play this particular piece because it was an African. A British African, a young man, I think he's 16 or 17 years old. They identified him because I think he'll be 18 or 17 in a few weeks. And so they have him all hemmed up, of course, as he should be. So I'm going to play this particular piece, about 8 minutes long, so bear with us.
Well, the 17-year-old who appeared in court here today had been arrested on Monday, pretty soon after those 999 calls were made by people in Southport asking for ambulances, saying that several people had been stabbed and among them were young children. Now, because of his age, because he's under 18, ordinarily we would not be allowed to name him. But today, the judge made an unusual decision. And of course, we know a lot has happened in the days since Monday. And that was referred to by the judge as he made that decision. He said that the allegations are serious and shocking. They could hardly be more serious, he said. But he also talked about misinformation online. He described rioting also in Southport, but also elsewhere too that we've seen, and made the decision to try and diffuse some of the tensions.
Charged overnight and brought to court this morning with a blue lights police escort, the 17-year-old accused of carrying out a mass stabbing at a children's dance class in Southport. Accused of murdering these three girls, Alice, Bibi and Elsie, and also trying to murder 10 other people, including 8 children. The suspect can now be named as Axel Rudakabana. This is him when he was younger, in his school uniform. Today in court, we barely saw his face as he sat in the dock with his head down and his face covered. During a brief hearing, first thing this morning in a youth court, and then later, during a hearing that lasted about an hour in a Crown courtroom in the same building, Axel Rudakabana had his grey tracksuit top pulled right up, covering all of his face. Occasionally, I saw him pull it down just enough so as he could look around the courtroom. When he was asked, "Are you Axel Rudakabana?" there was no response. When the judge asked his defence barrister if he could confirm his name again, no reply. In fact, the 17-year-old remained silent through his entire time in court today. Arrested on Monday by police who'd been called to a mass stabbing at a summer holiday dance workshop in Southport at 17, normally Axel Rudakabana wouldn't be publicly named, even once charged. But today, the judge decided his identity should be known. Among the reasons, his birthday next week when he turns 18, meaning he'd be named then anyway. And also, what's happened since Monday, what the judge called idiotic rioting, the false names and claims online. In ruling that it's in the public interest to name the teenager, Judge Andrew Mineri said, "Continuing to prevent full reporting has the disadvantage of allowing others who are up to mischief to continue to spread misinformation in a vacuum." He said, "It runs the risk that when the information becomes publicly available, that will provide an additional excuse for a fresh round of public disorder." As Axel Rudakabana left court, there was tight security again. While in Southport, after the violence on this street on Monday, and since then on streets nearby, more flowers still come. For many, those killed and those injured must not be forgotten in all this, including dance teacher Leanne Lucas and John Hayes, who were both stabbed while trying to protect the children. Today, from Alderhay Children's Hospital, an update. 2 of those who were taken there to be treated for their injuries have now been discharged.
Claire Fallon reporting. Sir Keir Starmer has announced a new national response to the violent disorder in the wake of the deadly Southport knife attack. The Prime Minister summoned police chiefs to Downing Street after far-right riots spread across the country last night. More than 100 people were arrested in central London and 11 in Hartlepool. There was violence in Manchester and a tense standoff with police in Aldershot. Andrew Misra has this report.
Next to the highest offices of law and order, violent disorder and chaos. An ugly contrast on Whitehall last night. More than 100 people were arrested. Police officers attacked and abused. Just as they were in Southport on Tuesday, when a mosque was targeted by rioters believed to be supporters of the English Defence League. Sparked by false information and online rumours about Monday's stabbing. That unrest seems to have spread like wildfire, shaping the tensions in London last night and in Manchester, where there was a violent protest outside a hotel known locally to house asylum seekers. At the same time, disorder in Hartlepool too. Once again, police officers attacked.
I think it's absolutely appalling what they've done. Like, they've just used it as an excuse to kick off, really. Like, everything's gone back to normal today. They're using the businesses as normal, you know. I'm guaranteed people who were here last night are coming in and using the businesses today. So it's achieved nothing. It was just an excuse for people to kick off.
It was worse than the videos portrayed, trust me. Like, it was, like, people were throwing bricks, like, whatever they could find.
And throwing punches. Cleveland police are investigating this viral video describing the man who's attacked as of black or ethnic origin. Most of the damage has been dealt with, but many are unsettled, including a local Muslim woman who didn't want to show her face on camera.
It makes me feel quite unsafe, to be honest. I've got family around here, my grandma lives here. I wear hijab, so do some members of my family, and it's not nice to think that I have to worry about their safety. I've got a younger sister who I don't want to go out alone now because I'm cautious of the fact that there is people out there that have these views that are affecting us, and that they don't have any boundaries when it comes to that.
So how to make people feel safe here? An independent assessment recently suggested this area is disadvantaged when it comes to police funding. Does Cleveland Police have enough officers to deal with this sort of thing?
I'm not sure they do at the moment. I don't think they've got the number of officers they need to be able to do it. I think that clearly this last night was coordinated. There's talk of further coordinated attacks, which is going to stretch the police's capacity to deal with it. So we urgently need to get those 13,000 police officers that the Labour government's promising onto our streets so that we can deal with these problems more effectively.
We put that to the Prime Minister after he'd held an emergency meeting with police chiefs.
Well, we've already made a commitment to increasing police numbers. That's a commitment we made into the general election, and particularly police officers to work in neighbourhood policing.
Keir Starmer has unveiled a new national unit to tackle violent disorder.
It is obvious to me, and I think obvious to anybody looking in, that so far as the far right is concerned, this is coordinated. This is deliberate. This is not a protest that has got out of hand. It is a group of individuals who are absolutely bent on violence.
Police joining forces, he says, will help prevent yet more chaos and violence on our streets.
That is what's happening in the UK. Yeah, family. Violence begets violence. And these are the most violent-prone people on the goddamn planet. There's a few things before we open up the phone lines to you that I definitely want to get to you. yeah. Here's another one.
A moment of reflection after a week of unrest. Here in Liverpool, at the oldest mosque in the UK, many still feel anxious. Racist riots rocked the country after false claims began spreading online that the perpetrator of a mass stabbing in nearby Southport last month was a Muslim immigrant. Now, one word keeps coming up here.
Paranoid. Paranoid of whoever I'm with. Paranoid around, you know, my train, my commute, even my Uber. And, you know, that in and of itself is quite psychologically, you know, traumatising, isn't it?
Imam Adam Kelwick is trying to reassure worshippers here after mosques, immigration centres and stores owned by Muslims were targeted.
There's this us and them in society. And everybody stays in their own corner and they demonise each other and they throw stones at each other.
Adam caught global attention when he crossed the line to start a conversation with people chanting anti-Islam slogans outside this mosque.
We were expecting the worst. At the same time, we decided to do something different. I put a video online saying that, you know, we've been told there will be protests outside our mosque tomorrow evening. We just want everybody to know who will be protesting that you are our guests and we will have food and drink ready for you and we're willing to listen to what your concerns are.
Amid the riots, this Liverpool library was looted, leaving locals outraged.
Really disgraceful. I mean, the library, what's that got to do with it? So, yeah, I was quite shocked, like, really, I've got to admit.
But not everyone is surprised that the UK reached boiling point.
It's very common for riots to start with false information being spread. But then usually they built on some kind of more deep-seated social, maybe economic or political issues.
Historian Vera Toltsil-Tinkovich says the seeds of today's discontent began after the 2008 financial crisis, then the UK's Brexit vote to leave the European Union.
We had, during the campaign around the Brexit referendum, all sorts of mainstream, non-mainstream, mainstreamed politicians are kind of blaming socio-economic problems on migrants. It resonates with certain individuals and, yeah, particularly kind of people from left-behind communities.
Following the riots, hundreds were arrested across the country and jail sentences were already handed down at this Liverpool court. But at this nearby pub, some argue those involved weren't all extremists.
The media brand anyone that has any legitimate concerns as potentially, you know, far right. Obviously, there is some people that are generally disappointed with the state of the country at the moment, and people need to, in positions of power, need to listen to these people instead of, you know, basically alienating them and branding them as far right.
Alienation is what Adam wants to avoid. He plans to open the mosque up and invite those who attended the riots inside to try and build bridges.
The result of all of this chaos over the last week is that my community now is communicating with parts of society who we've never spoken to before. I don't want things how they were before, because we've entered into a new phase now, and I'm sure we can build some amazing relationships and alliances with people who just over a week ago thought that we were their enemies.
He's relieved that far-right extremists also seem far outnumbered here. For now, riots have been replaced by anti-racist demonstrations across the country and an outpouring of support for the UK's ethnic minority communities.
And if they think that somehow that'll be the change, that because this has happened and you have, sorry about that, how this has happened and people in the UK, good-minded people, far outnumber all the right-wing. But let me just say this, based upon what I read, and I can read it to you, that's not the case. The UK is full. The bottom line is that Europeans, Caucasians, Yorugu, there's no difference whether they're in the UK, France, Germany, Belgium, South Africa, other places that they have taken, Australia, other places that they have annexed. The mindset is that they are superior. Remember, they suffer from cognitive dissonance. They suffer from cognitive dissonance. They are superior. And ain't a damn thing that you can say or do or try to prove otherwise. Because if they understood and was subject to truth and abide by it and humbled them, no. What did Sheikh Ahmed Diop do in 1974 at the Cairo Symposium? Him and Thelophilia Obinga. They proved that the ancient Kemetic people were African. But yet still today, 1974, 50 years ago, but still today, when you watch TV, when you watch movies, when you read on the internet and so forth. No. I'm going to continue with my lies because I'm a liar. I'm going to continue to shape and fashion the world in my image and in my interests. I don't give a damn about everybody else. That's clear. Because I've went into Africa and stole the humanity. I went into Africa and stole the resources. And I don't give a damn how bad it hurt those people or anything else, because I did it for our benefit. I did it so you could have gold-plated carriages and you have all the wealth and reserve and so forth in European countries. And so when those people in those countries have been decimated, they go to the colonizer's country. And when they go to the colonizer's country, they're isolated, but eventually they're vamped on. They're segregated. Get you some of you brothers and sisters into this conversation. Brother Irv, good morning to you, my brother.
Good morning, Baba Oshie. It's good to hear your voice.
You too, dear friend.
It's always good to hear you. But Baba Oshie, I'm not very optimistic about anything that Arubu does. I'm serious. Because
I'm with you. And
Baba Oshie, unless they're having they're going to the Macmillan Book Publishing Company, and they're recalling all the books that say slaves were happy and we were migrants, and that Christopher Columbus was an explorer, and George Washington had happy slaves, and until they recall these books and rewrite the lies that they put in those books, then you're not trying to change anything. So stop acting as if, because let's be clear, if Rubu's only going to go so far, and the rest of the way, you're going to have to push him. No, not push him. Shove him. You're going to have to shove Irugu into the realization that you're not the smartest on this planet. Your history is not what you say it is. It's not been whitewashed. It's been blackwashed. You've washed all the black out of it. And you've made it all you. Even your religion. The whole thing is a fraud. And these people, there's a boiling point that people get to when they put up with you, when they let you live in their house. After a while, they want you out of their house.
Yes.
Because you start cooking. And I don't want to smell all them spices and stuff. We don't eat that. So what happens is, you start to irritate them. And see, that's what's happening in the United States. Mm-hmm. We're irritating white people.
Right.
Because what's happening, I mean, I saw a post this morning that said, how can someone with $8 million and $70 million talk about rich people? They're talking about Obama's wife and Oprah Winfrey. Mm-hmm. So my point is, Baba Oshie, it's a deflection again. Here we are with not only the cognitive dissonance, when we do see it, they deflect us into something else. Those two people don't represent anybody but those two mm-hmm. people.
That's right. They don't represent us.
But they give you the impression all black people got money, all black people doing good, all you American Africans are doing fantastic. And what's happening over there, when you come to another person's house, when they're ready for you to leave, you're going to have to either pack your bags and leave, or you're going to have to fight. And these Muslims have chose to, I have no idea what they chose to do, but what I do know is that they're not planning to leave. Nobody said we're getting up out of here. They're all going to stay there and endure these Irugu going through Irugu's growing pains, because the reality is, Baba Oshie, you know like I know, Irugu's being outnumbered every day.
Oh, yes.
Every day, his numbers dwindling.
Always.
So by
He's been experiencing negative population growth for quite some time, for decades. So that means that every two that die, only one is born. And they're suffering. Because if you remember, at the beginning of the pandemic, or some say plandemic, whatever you want to call it, at the beginning of that incident, that it hit Europe the hardest, particularly older populations, because their population is the oldest. And, of course, if you're old, you're not reproducing. That's why Africa is such a threat.
Yes.
Population.
They're young.
Yes.
They're young people. But the thing is, Irugu, it plays the long game. Mm. Irugu figures, if I teach you English and I give you American clothes and I teach you, introduce you to this American diet, then you will gravitate towards America because it appears to be the path of least resistance. But what you give up to integrate is you give up your identity. You give up your soul. White people don't just want to get along. They want to dominate you, Baba Oshie.
Yes.
They want to control you and your children and your dog and everything else you have. And that is nothing but the truth. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're going to sit here and say that they're not, you can live in that that fantasy land if you want to. The reality is, Irugu is not going to give up power. Irugu is born into fighting, into violence. And they have no problem with bloodshed.
Yeah.
Because that's how they've been taught to exist, to shed blood. And we, as African people, we understand, African people understand a lot. And that's the only reason I say that we as Africans understand a lot, because we think in an African way, but because we're still here, Baba Oshi.
Yeah.
All the things that Africans have been through, and we're still here.
And we're still growing.
And we still,
even though, you know, I've read the Inyasasim. I read the Inyasasim and it talked about the effeminization of African people, which has been going on for some time. An excellent book by Baba Baruti. But, you know, this effeminization of African men, and you see it pronounced all the time on TV. I just saw RuPaul's ass on TV the other day, you know.
I just saw Busta Rhymes in a dress.
See? Busta Rhymes.
Busta Rhymes?
Busta Rhymes.
In a dress? In a dress, a red dress.
Unbelievable.
So you're right. The effeminate, that's a form of fighting. Once you take the mind of an American African, you own that American African.
Yeah.
You own it. It's not, I never saw a fence around a plantation. Did you?
No.
I've never seen a fence around a plantation because they had the mind of those so-called enslaved people.
Mm-hmm.
Once you got his mind, he ain't running. What I'm running for?
Yeah. And where am I going?
Here.
And where am I going? Yeah.
We got it good here. Master said that I can work in the house next year. In the house? Yeah. I don't have to be in the field with y'all in words.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't even use that word. We didn't call ourselves that. Mm-hmm. But once you get the mind of an American African, then he will denigrate himself. Mm-hmm. He will call himself names. He will take his woman and walk up and down the street in her drawers for everybody. Because in his mind, he believes he's serving his master. But he doesn't call it that. He thinks that, like you said, Baba Oshi, you said it a while ago, the definition of power is that someone else creating your reality, and you believing you did it.
Yeah.
You know, I look good in these clothes. I know the English language. You don't even know the King's English. Who the hell is the King? You ever heard that, Baba Oshi?
Yeah.
You know, what King are you talking about? Jesus? Is that what you're talking about? Because I don't understand how your name can be Peter, Paul, and Mary when you're in the middle of the Congo, or you're in the middle, you're in Africa. I don't see no Peters and Pauls and Marys in Africa, because they couldn't pronounce those names. That's what it was. Baba Oshi, I'm telling you, this thing going on in England right now, there's a lot more that we don't know. But what we do know is when you're coming and messing with a brother, you're messing with me. If my brother's in trouble, I'm in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one Africa.
That's right.
And we have to talk about it. And we have to discuss it in a civil manner. And we have to have some type of solution. Now, I mean, by the way, there's nothing wrong with discussing things. But if we're not doing it for means to an end. In other words, we have to find some way to have a discussion about this. And at the end of the discussion, have a plan for our sovereignty, our self-determination, and us knowing that this is my brother. I'm so upset. I want to send money to Burkina Faso right now.
I
want to send money. If money is what they need, I want to say, if I was a young man, I'd go there and fight with them. I would.
Yeah.
But I'm old, Baba Oshi. I'm old, and my back hurt a little bit. I'm just saying.
I know. I got you, brother. Same here, man.
But I would. And that's how strongly I feel about when you're in trouble. If Paul's in trouble or any other callers are in trouble, call. Let us know what's going on so that we can immobilize or do something. You never know who knows who.
Yeah.
You know, so it's interesting, Baba Oshi, that you brought this UK issue to the foreground, because it's a lot more going on than we know.
Yes.
And I saw some things when you were talking and the lady was talking. A lot of things are missing. They're quick to identify an American African or UK African, quick to identify. Did you identify the white guy quickly? But you didn't do that. So it's a lot of things going on.
Well, they identified this Palestinian, I think it was, or Iraqi, who was sending out disinformation, thereby having mosques attacked, Muslims attacked, as well as Africans attacked. You know, and then you got the right wingness, which of a number of organizations, which I read on. at least they're not a red on them, but the titles, you know, who are out in the streets causing havoc, and they're rioting, you know, whereas you see the rioting and you see us. No, they're rioting. Those are Caucasians breaking into Muslim stores. There are Caucasians breaking into Caucasian stores, you know, stealing and looting. So the reality is what it is. Yeah. So let me.
That's why I said it, there's more to it. Really, I'm going to go after this. That's why I keep saying there's a lot more to this story than what we're getting.
Yeah.
There's a lot more. And if anyone can fill us in on some things that we may not know, not opinion, facts, and not Donald Trump's alternative facts.
Wasn't that some funny shit? I can't believe that woman said that. No, we never have. We have alternative
facts. What is that?
The truth ain't the truth.
No, it ain't the truth. Truth is what I tell you it is.
Exactly.
And nobody called him out. No. Nobody called him out on that. And they still wearing their Trump hats and 70 million people that voted for him last time may vote for him again.
Yeah,
but,
and
you know,
more.
And more. If I really quickly, and I don't mean to change the subject, if I am to make a prediction, and I could be wrong, but I truly believe that this particular woman that's running is going to beat Donald Trump by a landslide. I'm not voting, so I give a damn
about it.
But I know that I don't look for a savior because I don't have that savior complex. Yeah. But I think that she has that he has dug a hole so deep.
Yeah.
And as they uncover the hole, people start to get embarrassed. When you follow a fool, and then he's exposed as a fool, then you feel like a fool.
Exactly. And
so
that's what's happening.
It's all foolish.
And that's what's happening. There's a lot of Caucasians feeling very foolish at this time.
Because he has hoodwinked you.
Yeah.
In other words, he's made you believe something that wasn't there because you want to say what he says. You believe in his rhetoric, but you know that it's not conventional and that it won't work. It'll hurt you more than it'll hurt the people you're trying to hurt. You're making a fool out yourself. So
yeah,
I think it's going to happen. But anyway, go ahead.
All right, dear brother. All right. Brother Marcus, good morning.
Yes, indeed. Good morning, Brother Ocean. Good morning, Brother Irv. Yes, indeed. You know, I was reading a scripture this morning, you know, to my Bible. And my Bible says, seek ye first financial independence, and all else shall be added unto you. It's time now for black people to reclaim our wealth. Because the great Marcus Garvey said, give the black people wealth, it will give them power. I was talking to somebody last night, and they said, why the black people, you know, why they don't have, you know, why, you know, these black people made it, they have money. Why? I said, well, look, the system don't mind individual black folks having wealth, you know. What they don't want is to see collective wealth.
I say, right on, Marcus.
The individual, that's why none of these black folks with wealth, you don't hear them say anything about black oppression because they know that you open your mouth, they're coming after you. They're coming after your money. See, but if it's collective wealth, it's harder for them to destroy. It's time for us to reclaim our wealth. You know, I'm looking for contractors right now to go into Africa to go build. Can't find a black contractor. Who will say, hey, let's go down to Ghana and let's start building some places, building some houses.
Yes.
Have deals looking for black investor. When you tell them about Africa, it's like you're talking rocket science. It's like you're talking about going to Mars. You know what I'm saying? But in spite of it, we gonna get where we have to get.
That's right.
I realize one of our biggest problems as a people is lack of trust, especially when it comes to business. Lack of trust.
That's right.
We're walking on wealth. We're walking on gold. I just found out they found one of the biggest diamonds in Botswana. 2,000 carats plus. 2,000 plus carats. They found it in So there is in Botswana. So there is so much wealth in Africa. Yet still we say, oh, we're poor. No.
No.
You know, I hear Amos, Dr. Amos Wilson said that. He said, no, your mind is poor.
Mm-hmm.
Your mentality is poor. Because Japanese people don't have the resources that Africa
That's
has.
That's right.
But Japan is a wealthy country because Japan invests in their people.
Oh, right.
The greatest resource is their people. You know, it is time for black folks to reclaim our wealth because give the black people wealth, it will give them power.
So
these rules ain't going to change, my brother. The Englishman, he ain't going to change. He's a beast. He was always a beast.
Yep.
I will always be a beast.
Ashe.
Anyway, I mute my phone and I'll continue listening.
Thank you, Brother Marcus. Appreciate you, man. Yeah. Brother Ted, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brother Oshie. I can't say anymore. Brother Marcus said it.
Oh, he said it all. I hear you. Yes, sir.
And I don't even much want to follow any more than what Urban, what Brother Marcus has said. I love it. I love it. And it's so very true that we really, really need to work on our wealth. And so I'm just going to be listening for the rest of the program.
All right. Well, if you got something to say, man, you know what to do. If you got something to say, brother, because you're always open.
It's a drop a mic moment. And hey, man. I'm supporting the program as always, and thank you so very much
all right,
for taking my call. Have a great weekend.
You too, brother. Thank you. Peace.
Peace.
Yeah. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, during the break, I'm going to have a decision about what I'm going to play or read or whatever as it relates to this, and open up the phone lines and get the perspective of people, man. Of course, Brother Paul is on, so we'll talk with Brother Paul, who's dealing with the firsthand. So we'll talk more. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie. On Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. I want to play this particular piece of Saeed Bolin. I played him before. It's a Muslim brother. I'm not sure where he's from, but he has some good sound commentary, and this is what he says on this issue.
So on, all British citizens, as well as from immigrants, of course. But so many people expressing, like, trauma and shock, disappointment, grief over these riots and these attacks. Frankly, I don't know why. I mean, I don't know how you could have ever convinced yourself that you're living in a healthy, civilized society to where any of this should shock you. Look, these English people have felt like their Englishness was being deteriorated. You know, their English culture, their English heritage, their English Anglo so-called civilization, they felt it was being marginalized, minimized, and undermined by the presence of non-whites, and primarily of Muslims, the presence of Muslims. So what you're seeing with these riots is just them reasserting their culture, their heritage, their so-called civilization at its most raw, its most honest, the most primal expression, which is hateful, primitive, and violent. That's their culture. That's their culture, and they're telling you loud and clear. Why, these are festivals for them. You call it riots, but for them, these are festivals of Anglo-British culture and tradition. That's who they are. They're not tolerant people. They're not multiculturalists. They're monoculturalists, and they always have been. I mean, you can tie a monkey's tail to a stick to make it go straight, but the moment that stick comes loose, the tail will curl up again. You can't artificially change a society, no. You can't artificially change the nature of a society. And you should already know. You should already know the nature of that society. Since it was almost exclusively because of the violent, tyrannical, supremacist nature of that society that the countries that your parents came from, your grandparents came from, and so on, that's why their countries became so unlivable that they had to immigrate to that miserable island to begin with. I mean, how did you think that people who were brutal colonizers and enslavers in your country were somehow completely different when they got home? I mean, don't you know that the highest domestic violence statistics are in the homes of police officers? No. No one is savage on the job, but gentle at home. They were in your countries, robbing your countries, pillaging your countries, destroying your countries, because they thought you deserved it. And they look at you the same way now. They look at you on the streets of London, on the streets of Brighton, on the streets of Manchester, Bristol, Liverpool, and Cardiff. They look at you the same way that they looked at you when you were on indigo plantations and when they were starving you to death in Bengal. They look at you the same way that they looked at you when you were on tobacco and sugar and cotton plantations in the Caribbean. The same way that they looked at you when they were stealing your lands in Kenya, stealing your lands in Zimbabwe and everywhere else, and forcing you into mines and forcing you onto plantations to deliver all of your natural wealth into their hands. I'm telling you, they look at you the same way now. When you're on their streets, they look at you the same way as they looked at you when you were in your countries of origin. They hunted you over there, and they'll hunt you over here. In fact, they'll hunt you even more savagely when they're on their home turf. I mean, do you think that a wolf is more dangerous when he's outside and less dangerous when you're right there in his den? Well, everybody knows that a wolf is even more violent when he thinks he's protecting his den than when he's out hunting. So I don't see why you're surprised. I don't see why you're shocked. I mean, it would be different if your history with them was different. You know, if they had come into your countries, if they had come into your lands as traders and as merchants and just did business with you in a respectable, civilized way, but that's not what they did, is it? So, I mean, if you're the victim of a brutal home invasion where you get assaulted and robbed in your own house, what makes you think that the criminal who did that to you is going to welcome you as a guest when you show up at his door? So, yes, they felt that their culture was getting pushed aside. And now they're holding parades all across the UK to celebrate who they are and to remind you who they are and to remind everyone else who they are. And listen, I'm well aware that this is orchestrated. that it is calculated. I'm well aware that what's happening in the UK right now is all part of the destabilization project that has been in progress for at least as long as the Ukraine war has been in progress. I'm the first person to point that out. I'm the first person to talk about that. I know that's what's happening because I said it would happen. And it's going to get worse. I know that Tommy Robinson is on the payroll. I know he's an agent of disruption, but he's not the only one. I know that's why they specifically choose to hold their Anglo pride parades in heavily immigrant and minority areas, precisely to inflame. And precisely so that English people can see the police crack down on white nationalists. That's just to promote the white nationalist narrative. You know, if immigrant and so-called minority offenders get lighter sentences than whites, the whole point of that is just to advance that narrative, to stoke resentment and racial hatred. Everyone knows that Tommy Robinson is paid by higher-ups. Well, those higher-ups are exactly that. This racial and ethnic strife is sought by the elites of the society. Because, like I said, time and time again, Europe, including the UK, is slated to be nothing but a conflict zone. But the point is, they're able to do this because that racism, that white supremacy, that brutal, violent heritage and culture is their heritage and culture. And they never rehabilitated themselves from it. They never civilized from it. They have been barbarians for millennia. And that's what they are today. To one extent or another, all they did was medicate those hateful, violent tendencies. They sedated it. They treated the symptoms, just like the pharmaceutical industry does. Just like they do with illness. You know, they never cure you. They just medicate the symptoms so that it'll be dormant, without ever actually treating the underlying condition. Well, that's the same way that they've dealt with their perverse hatred and their racism and their penchant for violence. They just put a Band-Aid on a tumor. They plaster over a cyst with foundation, makeup, and blush so that you can't see it. Or anyway, so that you can't tell whether what you are seeing is what you think you're seeing. You know how they talk about microaggressions and implicit bias and all that? Well, that's what I'm talking about. It's like radiation that escapes through a landfill of toxic waste because you never actually got rid of the waste. You just tried to bury it. But no matter how deep you bury it, it's still there. And it's going to come out one way or another. Look, I'm a Westerner. My ancestors were Irish and German. But I don't feel any conflict in acknowledging the reality that the West has always been and still is barbaric. You know, there was a Sahabi named Abu Dharr al-Ghifari, and his whole tribe, before Islam, they were highway robbers. They were bandits, thieves, murderers, and they were renowned for that. When they embraced Islam, they didn't pretend that they didn't have that history. In fact, having that history just demonstrated how much Islam changed them. They were no more defined by what they were before Islam, nor did they identify or defend what they were before Islam any more than I am defined by or identify with or defend the history of the West. You have to tell the truth. I mean, the irony, of course, is that these riots, this is all part of a destabilization campaign by white Westerners against white Western countries. And these people still want to believe in some kind of white Western fraternity. Your forefathers were Anglo serfs and peasants used and abused by Anglo aristocrats. And that's basically the same situation now. You are defending a so-called culture, a so-called civilization that treated your ancestors like animals, treated your women like property, and your children as nothing but expendable drones for workhouses and mines. You enslaved each other before you ever started enslaving anyone else. It's a miserable, disgraceful, inhuman heritage. I mean, I'm American. And there only are Americans because white Europeans were so vicious and so tyrannical to each other that whoever could escape ran away. My people went to America because you were starving them in the potato famine. White-on-white oppression. That's your whole history before you became multicultural oppressors. That's what I mean. What you did elsewhere, you were already doing at home. What you did to other people, you were first doing to each other. You know, when the colonizers first went to Ghana, they were flabbergasted to discover that every house, every home, had a toilet that was cleaned every day. Meanwhile, you still had your people defecating in public, in collective cesspits that never got cleaned. Yes, you never cleaned them. You just buried it and dug a new one. See how you do? That's a habit with you. Just bury it and then start somewhere else. That's basically the origin of America, if you think about it. You just moved away from the cesspit of Europe to start a new cesspit on the other side of the Atlantic. I'm telling you because you need to know. I'm not telling you to denigrate you. I mean, how are you going to be uplifted if you don't know how low you are now and how low you've always been? Westerners don't know the difference between standing on the shore and drowning. Because, wallahi, you are drowning. And you're being drowned, actually. Your own so-called culture, your own so-called civilization is drowning you. And you're out here in the streets of the UK defending the culture that's drowning you and that drowned your forefathers. Well, you don't know how much in common you actually have with the immigrants that flee to your country from their countries because your country ruined their countries. Because the same so-called civilization that ruined their countries has been ruining you for hundreds of years. You need to wash the makeup off of that cyst, rip the Band-Aid off of that tumor, and start actually trying to heal yourselves. And you need to charge the doctor who never did anything but cover up your sickness, cover up your deformity, cover up your mutation instead of treating it. Because he never cared about your health in the first place. And you need to charge that doctor, which is your so-called civilization, you need to charge that doctor with malpractice. Charge your civilization, so-called, with malpractice. I'm saying you need to direct your anger at the people who are trying to direct your anger at anyone but themselves. Because they're the ones you should be mad at. You should direct your anger at all these people who are lying to you about your so-called civilization, telling you to be proud and defensive about a culture that has done nothing but keep you perverted, hateful, violent, and criminal for centuries. Because you have a right to be worthwhile human beings. And your so-called civilization has let you down. It's let you down badly. It hasn't just let you down developmentally, morally, spiritually, ethically, and so on. It's even let you down in the most practical of terms. You know, the very thing that you like to think that you excel in. You like to think that you're the most practical and efficient people on the earth. But look at your system. Your so-called civilization built a system, built a society that's literally making you go extinct. Your materialism, your atheism, your consumerism, your urbanization, your worship of money has created a society that cannot even perpetuate itself anymore. How practical is that? I'm telling you, you're out of your minds. Nothing about the way that you approach the world, nothing about the way you approach life makes any sense. It's killing you. And you're so insane that you're singing God Save the King instead of saving yourselves.
Listen up.
I say. I say. Man, open up the phone lines. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Brother Paul.
I say, Baba Oshi.
I say, right on. Brother Paul.
I say.
Baba Oshi.
What's up, man? How you doing?
Well, I'm alive and kicking, and I'm giving thanks for every and each day the Most High gives me to extend myself, grow myself, and expand my wisdom across the world. So that's how it is.
Right on, man. Right on. Well, how are things going?
Let me give you this for the sake of clarity and good order. Our brother, Amawali El Shabazz Malcolm X, the media is the most powerful entity on earth. They have the power to make the innocent guilty and to make the guilty innocent. And that's the power because they control the minds of the masses. The press is so powerful in its image making role. It can make the criminal look like he's the victim and make the victim look like he's the criminal. If you aren't careful, the newspapers or what I.
You've been cut off, Brother Paul. You've been cut off.
Sorry about that. I apologize.
Okay.
Let me roll it back. It can make the criminal look like he's the victim and make the victim look like he's the criminal. The newspapers, or what I'm referring to as the mainstream mass manipulating media, will have you hating the people who are being oppressed and loving the people who are doing the oppressing. That's our greatest, our fallen warrior, the one who gave his life for the cause, Amawali El-Shabazz Malcolm X. Now, you know, I say that because everything I'm about to say is in that spirit of the spirit of the realist, not the spirit of the distractors or the detractors or those who want to just distract the cause. I say that in the spirit of the realist, those who are prepared to give their life for the cause and who have given their life for the cause. That's the spirit I beg to give you what I'm going to give you. That piece you just played, I recognize the presenter, and it's Channel 4. It's got Channel 4, the part you played, the newsreel. Channel 4, for the sake of clarity, I'm putting it out there in the ether so people fully understand what's going on. Channel 4 used to be a private company. It came about in probably the early 80s. Okay, I remember it because it's in my time. When I grew up, we only had three channels, mainly BBC and ITV. BBC, British Broadcasting Corporation, ITV, International TV. ITV was a private franchise. It was the first company we saw on our broadcast channels which had adverts. They were taking in money from privatized corporations. BBC is a taxpayer. It's a government-funded operation, BBC. You have a similar body in your country, part of the BBC, called the PBC, Public Broadcast Corporation. That's the BBC. But anyway, Channel 4, the part you just played, was a private company. And they got into financial difficulties, and they were taken over by the government. Most people in this country didn't for a long time know that the government totally controls the Channel 4, the part you've just played. I had a discussion with a friend, and it came out, and we then concluded that the government is running Channel 4. And one of the reasons why I say that, because when it first was broadcast, it used to broadcast a lot of interesting programs, a lot of documentaries. And all of a sudden, it went down another route. And that's how me and a friend got in a conversation. We was asking the question, why is there so much stuff on this channel? Every other program they show on this channel is something to do with alternative lifestyles and transgenderism and all kind of nonsense. And it's out of that discussion, we then realized, it happened and we'd forgotten that it'd been taken over by the government. Now, what I'm saying is sometimes, as our greatest Amawali El-Shabazz Malcolm X says, you've got to watch the media and be very careful. In his time, he didn't have social media. They didn't have the internet. But today we have the internet. And on the internet, we have some very sophisticated, clever ways of manipulating social media. What you would not recognize. I'm just going to say that. You're not going to recognize it. You're not. The type of computer programs out here today is just phenomenal. I'm in it. I'm in IT. Even the things I see every day is blowing my mind. It's so powerful. Okay? So the point I'm trying to make is this. A great deal of some of them things he says is true. But one thing I can say now, none of what you've played is going on today. None of it. It's not happening today. There's nobody rioting, running up and down the streets like lunatics, smashing up shops or even attacking people. It's not going on. Let me tell you what's actually happened. They showed something on the TV 2 days ago. According to them, I can't verify this, but this is what they say. They showed a collage of 400 people. They claim it's 400 people been arrested, okay? And I looked at that on the TV, the television. And I said, for the first time in my life, I said, wow, not one black face. They claim 400 people who have been arrested without, according to them, this is unprecedented. None of them was allowed to have bail, are all now receiving sentences. This is another thing that is unprecedented, between 3 years and 10 years.
Wait a minute. What you said, those people, those 400, they're facing a sentence between 3 years and 10 years?
And 10 years.
For inciting a riot? Right. Okay. Okay, go ahead.
Well, at first they were being charged, right, for what they call a fray, which is causing public disturbances, etc. So, right, throwing bricks, smashing up places, etc., etc., etc. But then all of a sudden, some of the politicians and some of the lawmakers decided, no, that's not enough. We need to charge them for rioting. Some wanted to even charge them for it's a higher charge, like what do they call it? It escapes my mind. But that higher charge is a minimum sentence of 3 years and a maximum sentence of 10 years. And they're not paying. And I'm thinking in my mind, coming from the judiciary and a legal background, how have they managed to do that so quickly? Bearing the fact that there's, I didn't see one black person on that charge, but majority of them white. And this is white people doing it to their own white people. So I'm trying to work out and read between the lines what's going on. Let me just explain what I think is happening here. You see this new prime minister we got here? Okay, this new prime minister, which you're not going to know none of this. You're not going to know none of this. This Keir Starmer, they call him Sir Keir Starmer. The Sir means he's been given a high title by the Queen. That's why they call him Sir. So he was a barrister at law, what you call an attorney, the ones who wear the wigs. He went to the top of his field, okay? KC, King's Counsel. And also, one important fact, he was head of the CPS. The CPS is the Crown Prosecution Service. When you commit a criminal offence in this country, it's the Crown what takes you to court and prosecutes you, the Crown. So you go and rob someone, kill someone, stab someone, the Crown takes you to court. So he was head of that. So I'm putting two and two together in my mind. I'm saying, wow, how did this man manage to... He had the courts, which is, again, unprecedented, operating on a... almost every single day. He put all the other, any other crime, it usually takes maybe 9 months before you commit a crime to get to court, and maybe 10 months, 12 months before you're prosecuted. He put...
He fast-tracked all of that, huh? He fast-tracked all of that. He fast-tracked all of that.
Everything down. Yeah. Whatever you were charged with, murder, whatever, he closed that down. He said, these people are going to jail. Not one of them got bail. Not one of them. I've never seen that before. Now, let me show you what I think's really happening. Yeah? Instead of taking the stuff from the mainstream mass manipulating media and using the stuff for the agitators and the distractors. Let me tell you what's going on. Just before this, yeah? Before he became prime minister, okay? I've got to be careful what I'm saying here. Because I know they're listening. Before he became prime minister, right, a few years ago, let me go back a little bit further. When I was growing up, there used to be a man on TV. They called him Jim Will Fix It was his name. Obviously, his name wasn't Jim Will Fix It, but that's the title. He had a program. And what he used to do, he used to have a program where, you know, he, if you're a young person, you write a letter, you might want to meet a famous footballer or a famous celebrity, and he would do that for you. You know, you heard on telly, and this was in the 70s. I remember it clearly. Everybody knew. Oh, this man, you know, whoever was your hero, you write him a letter, he would make that happen. Anyway, we're all grown up now. We're all grown up. So this guy, this man, Jim Will Fix It, he's got all these awards because he does all these charities and all these works for all these celebrities and high... falutin' people, okay? The Queen gives him the award. His name was Sir Jim Will Fix It. That's what they call him. The Queen's award and everything, yeah? But apparently, people were claiming that this man was a master paedophile, child rapist, etc., 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 and that he was part of a massive organization when they were raping off children, killing children, murdering children, apparently, yeah? Okay, now anyway, people were complaining. There was police reports, but this man was never arrested. Okay, now at some stage, our current prime minister today was head of the CPS.
You're cut off again, Brother Paul.
He's gone again,
yeah.
Bubbles.
Yeah.
There was a time. Sorry about that. I have to keep resetting this phone. I think it's timing out and it's cutting out the software. But anyway, there was a time, okay, when he was running, when he became a politician, because remember, he was in the judiciary as head of the CPS. He elevated himself to become a politician. And then all of a sudden, he betrayed. I'm not going to go into it because it's too long. He betrayed the head of the Labour Party at the time, was Jeremy Corbyn. Betrayed him. That's another story. And became the head of the Labour Party, right? Became a politician. And there was a time, I actually saw this on TV, when some white men, about 10 of them, confronted him in the street. He's going to the House of Parliament. They ambushed him, okay? And this is significant because the person who stood in between them was a black man we know. I ain't going to say his name, but what I know about him, he was educated right there in America. He's born in this country. He's educated. He went to Yale. I know all about him. He's a member of parliament in a constituency where my family is, okay?
So, okay, very quickly, cutting to the chase, Paul. This man, you're saying, committed these heinous crimes against children. He's a pedophile, and he's being protected. Is that what you're saying? I want to get out of that pit, Paul, because hold on, Paul.
This is what I'm saying. This prime minister we have now today, okay, was head of the CPS, Crown Prosecution Service, okay? And while this notorious Jim Will Fix It, Sir Jim Will Fix It, was committing his crimes, which there are police records of, people reporting it, he failed to prosecute this man, right? Now, what I'm saying is, when he became a politician, he at one stage, he was confronted by the people. He was actually confronted by a group of white men in the street. This was on TV. And when he was confronted, they were calling him a pedophile. They were calling him all kinds of names for protecting this man. This man went to his grave without no prosecution, still with his titles and everything, yeah? And these white men were claiming that he was part of it, right? So, funny, all of a sudden now he becomes prime minister. We get all this madness going up, and he's locking up. What they're telling you is right-wing people. They keep putting that in the news, right-wing. And you heard in that guy said, it's not just right-wing. And although he's a white man telling you that, I know he's a white man, I haven't even seen it, but I know he is. All he's telling you that, it's true what he's talking, because the reality of it is, and this is my point, Bob Olchi, to sum it all up, this is my point. These people, and when I say these people, the upper echelons, the 1%, they are playing us like we're on a bloody chessboard. They're the ones doing it. And their friends. He's just a protector of them. They're playing all of us like we're a damn chessboard. And my point has always been this. I've been looking into this and trying to work out what's going on, how this game is played. And I'm telling you, without no reservations, it starts here, right here in England. It starts here. And they have their links in your country, right? Still to this day. Not just from the beginning when they set it up. Still to this day, it's the same game. That's why it's the same plan. It's the same game. That is always been my role.
Paul, it's the same people. It is the same Europeans with the British. Hold on, Paul. It's the same thing with the British at the top, because the British were the most profound enslavers, colonizers on this goddamn planet.
Right.
The British.
Right. Right, and you see the problem is with the distractors who don't want to hear that, because they have bought into what Public Enemy calls, they've bought into the hype. They're following the hype. They're following the circus with 2025. I'm telling you 1,000,000%, 2025 is a distraction. Let me prove it's a distraction.
I don't care about the distraction 2025, because let me say this, Paul. The bottom line is this. There were riots in England, in the UK, in various parts of the country, based upon all the information that I've received, where right-wing...
Listen, man. This is what I'm saying about the propaganda. Not one of them... They would never dare come to London. Never dare. The last time there was a riot in London, which was maybe about 10 years ago, a black man got shot in London, and they tried to plant a gun on him, right? As a result of that, 10 people lost their life as a result of that riot. They died. No people died in this riot. They were murdered, shot, stabbed, burnt to death in their houses. That's what happened in that last riot. I'm making that up. That's what happened. That's when it started in London. Listen, them white man, as much as you're pulling for the propaganda, they would never come to London or Manchester. If they came to London, you would be reading in New York how many people got killed. That's what happened. That also happened. So what you're seeing is all in them small areas where it's predominantly white. Even in Pakistan, they would never really go to them. Manchester, where most of them Pakistanis are. Them Pakistanis are connected to Afghanistan, all that, with their heroin business, their drug business. You think you can just go there and run up your mouth? Listen, they will shoot you and kill you, bruv. They're not going to go there. They're all doing it in the areas where they predominantly are, in them small towns and all that, and they're making it, you look like they're all over England. They're not all over damn England. They would never dare come to London. Where I grew up, you think they come there? They know better. They know better. Because East London is a place where the working class people are, the people who don't play, the people who are in their little drugs and their guns and their shooting. You, what, you think they're going to come there? They ain't coming there. Listen, wake up. So the reality of it is that the news manipulates the media. That's what they do, right? They manipulate things. Yes, white people are running up and down, right? The people who are running up and down are the people in the 95%, the people who have been placed in the dum-dum zone, who really don't know what's going on. Like your distractors who send you those things. They don't have a clue what's really going on. We're just being played. We've been played against each other, even in our homes. Man against woman, woman against child. That's what's really happening. And I'm saying this. This is what I'm saying. It's about bloody time we wake up. It's about bloody time we stop allowing ourselves to be played by these people and their propaganda machines and gain some intelligence instead of this dumb, dumb behavior we're always in.
Let me say this. Based upon all the shit that's happened, it firmly plants into my head, into my mind, into my heart that we got to get up out of here, Paul. There's no way. Listen.
I'm going to argue with you.
Because the bottom line is that these people have never meant us any good. They never will mean us any good. Our lives in their environment, in their reality, has always been marginalized, will always be marginalized. In fact, they want to. In fact, when realizing our age of our people and groups, we will outpopulate them in the immediate future. And so they have worries about that. They are concerned. They are deeply concerned.
You know where my frustrations come from? You call it passion, but I'm telling you, I'm highly frustrated. Like I told you, I'm reading the book, The Destruction of Black Civilization. According to Chancellor Williams, we've been in this dum-dum zone for 6,000 years. That's what he says. Not 100 years, 6,000 years since they first come into Africa. He talks about how these chiefs sold us out years ago. He talks about that in the book. My frustration is, how have we learned a damn thing in 2024? We're still fucking shite. That is, I'm just going to say it as it is, rambling on about bullshit today, right? And not prepared to get up and overthrow these devils. That's the reality of things among us. So let's stop bullshitting. We are frightened like cowards to get up and overthrow these people. That is the reality of our shitty situation, right? We can talk and write all the damn stupid books we want to write, but we are afraid to get up and overthrow these people. And I'm not talking to the women, because I ain't going to ask my mom to go up and overthrow no one. I'm talking to the
right.
Men.
No, it's about men. It's about men. And it would have behooved you to listen to the program at the beginning when I read the Inya Sasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Because, in fact, you know what? For the benefit, I'm going to read it again. For the benefit of what we have experienced, I'm going to read it again, you know, because it's important.
Brother Ochi, when I say and I raise my voice, I don't mean no disrespect to you. I have to tell you how. I'm sick and tired of these pansy, effeminized black males around us, these effeminized ones.
Exactly. Let me read this very quickly, Paul. August 24th, tomorrow's date. Of the Inya Sasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. I would rather die on my legs than to live on my knees. Didan Kimathi. Urugu understands that when it comes to making the African family more vulnerable to genocidal process, not only do you have to get the man out of the home, you have to get the man out of the man. And effeminization is the ultimate process by which this is done. For such males come to the conclusion that being effeminate is the safest way to survive and, in fact, profit from anti-African violence of the Urugu's world. Effeminates do not have to be emasculated. They are Urugu's eunuchs, superlative models of emasculation,
wholly ill-prepared for either mental or physical battle. Effeminacy among African males is the manifestation of a much, much deeper social mental illness that has fully corrupted the individual soul. To effeminize means to take someone who is or would be masculine and turn them into feminine. Remember that effeminization is a process. The suffix as nation means is occurring. Effeminization is the process of making what otherwise is not feminine or is a balance of the masculine and effeminate with a dominant masculine component, wholly feminine. To become effectively effeminized, an African male must accept as an impossibility any virulent African-centered definition of manhood. Vanquishment must become internalized. Here we are talking about the result of a process that makes being masculine for African males an undesirable condition. African manhood becomes objectionable because it is perceived as unrealistic, unattainable, and especially life-threatening.
Ashe. Baba, I want to say one last thing. You know, when you know you see anomalies.
Yes.
When Trump, that psychopath over there, right, when he got apparently shot, you came on radio, and the first thing you talked about is the anomalies. You talked about the anomalies, yeah? And I think the reason why you spoke about the anomalies, let me just make it like this. I don't want to keep it too long. You were in the fiber grade. You reached captain. That's what you told us, yeah? Now, I'm thinking to myself, I'm just trying to assess the situation, that in your role as a fiber grade, there must have been times when people deliberately burnt down the places. They burnt them down deliberately, maybe for insurance claims, some sort of financial gain.
A lot. Yeah? When I first came on, all across this country, a lot of arson. Right, go ahead. Right.
Now, in your experience, because remember, you're the captain, yeah? So you'd have gained a lot of experience, saw a lot of things, yeah? So in that experience, sometimes you may hear, like, there's a fire. And before you maybe get there or look at it any further, something comes into your mind. And that's through your experience. You think, that's a setup. Because of the way it's gone, you may think they've deliberately done that. Has that ever happened to you?
Yes. Of course.
Yes. You know it. Yes. That's based on your knowledge. That's based on your experience. That's based on all the things you've been through. Is that right?
Yes.
So when you saw Trump get shot, based on your experience, based on your wisdom, based on all those faculties, you straight away saw the anomalies.
Yes.
Straight away, didn't you?
Exactly.
That's why you can come to that conclusion. So when that boy, right, I asked you a question, if you ever met anyone from Rwanda, right? The reason why I asked you that, yeah, because I've never met no one from Rwanda. And all I've been around these groups, getting involved with our people, African people, doing all these things for over 20 years, and I've never met a person from Rwanda. All of a sudden, our government is telling us they're going to ship strangers to Rwanda. Why? Why? But when you look into it, what's really happened is, I told you before, Blair, part of his foundation, has an investment in Uganda, and they've been working together. A whole heap of taxpayers' money went to Rwanda, millions to build things for refugees, and not one refugee went, not one immigrant went, not one they sent. So when this new government came in, he was saying, where's the money gone? He wants the money back. And then all of a sudden, this young African, another thing, the picture they show you of him being 17 is not the same picture which they drew of him in court.
Right.
Now, I saw that.
Right.
No one told me that. I'm seeing that. What I'm talking about, the anomaly.
Well, you don't hardly see his face in court because he's hiding his face. What you see is his eyes and his hair, and his hair spiraling upward. Yes.
Right. He's hiding his face because he's not. It's not the same person. The person is. Look, you look at that picture of him as a boy, right? This is the anomaly again. When you look at the picture of him as a boy, I showed someone this. I said, look at Paul Kagame. Go online and look at Paul Kagame and then look at that little boy. And they tell me if they haven't used AI to make him the same person or he's a relative. He looks exactly like Paul Kagame.
Well, he has a thin face.
Is that coincidence?
On that picture, has a in his school uniform or his school blazer, prep school, whatever, he does look like Paul Kagame because he has a very slender face.
Now, do you think that's a coincidence? Now, there is software right now. I can take you and make you into a little boy. And people will look at the picture and they'll see something, but they won't straight away recognize it's you. Now, the point I'm trying to make is this. They told us that that little boy had autism. That's the first thing they started reporting. Autism. He had autism. And I'm thinking, well, why are they saying he's got autism? I believe the reason why they're saying he's autism, just recently the Portman Institute has been prosecuted, the Portman Institute and the Tavistock Institute, both of them together, have been prosecuted for giving young children them blockers to block their gender. Just recently they've been prosecuted for that, right? And they were going to schools and most of the children they were doing that to had autism. Listen to what I'm telling you. They had autism. That's why they're saying that boy had autism. Okay, they're using that. Listen, man, these people, I told you, these people in this country, they are the captains of deceit, of psychological warfare and deception and social engineering. These people are the caveman. And if I'm telling you a word of lie, Sigmund Freud was trained in this country. He's the captain of psychology. Book you get on psychology, it's Sigmund Freud.
No, Sigmund, his nephew? His name is Sigmund Freud. He's a fraud. Sigmund Freud.
Right, and who was his nephew? His nephew was Edward Bernays. Edward Bernays came to your country. Edward, go online if you think I'm making this up or it's some nutty theory. Edward Bernays was the man who went into your corporations and told the corporations that you have to use psychological warfare on the people. You have to use it. And that's why the corporations then decided to use psychological operations on the people. They use that in voting. They use that in TV. They use that in everything they do. So Edwards of Bernays was the person who put through the campaigns. He said, we have to teach, get women out to work and teach women how to smoke. Edward Bernays, that's the nephew of Sigmund Freud. They were trained in the Tavistock Institute, which is in London. Now, if you think I'm making it up, go and read it. Go and read and see if I'm making one word lie up. It's the truth. You had a guy come and talk about cigarettes, and I asked him, Edward Bernays, he knew Edward Bernays. Edward Bernays deals with psychological warfare. And that's what they're using on the people. Trump is practicing the Tavistock Institute's rule book, psychological warfare. And so is the other one. It's all psychology they're using on the people. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to speak, Baba Oshi.
All right, Brother Paul. There's some other folks up in here. The reality of it is, what's interesting, they had these disturbances all across the UK that did not be reported by the news here in America. I'm not sure whether it was reported to other parts of Europe. I'm not sure how it was reported. But if you go online, there is a plethora of information and from different perspectives. And just as Paul said, the news will have you believe that your enemy is your friend and your friend is your enemy. The news will have you believe that. But the reality is, all of it's bull. The people in this country, along with the people in Europe, and I'm not just mentioning England, but of course England is the top of the European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. That's a title that Paul gave me when we used to talk about white supremacy, because they're not white and they show hell, and showing hell ain't supreme. They're European. They identify with the Caucasus Mountains. They chose that, so we'll give them that. European, Caucasian, extremism. They're very extreme in their behavior towards others. They're very extreme in their idea of what to do about others and other societies and other people's lands, other people's resources. European, Caucasian, extremism. Racism, there's no such thing as race. There's no such thing as race. Europeans created the idea of race. Johann Blumenbach, Carol Linnaeus. You can look it up. They're the ones that developed the stratification. There's no such thing as race. There are cultures. There are cultures. And if you want to say, okay, there is a race, the human race. There is a race, the human race, of which Africans are the fathers and mothers of. There's no such thing as race. But there's racism because they created it. And they implemented it. Racism. European Caucasian extremism. Racism and privilege. They have reserved the privilege for themselves as a people on this planet. That they have the right to do whatever, to whomever, or whenever. We do what we want. We go where we go. We spend what we want to spend. When they openly, the amount of open suggestions by racist individuals, racist organizations, and racist entities is so pervasive today. And you would have, I shouldn't say that, because to me, I've been dealing with this shit since the 60s. So we're talking about 45 years of my life. Brother Irv.
Baba Oshi, yeah. I just want to say Ashe. Because you, when you stopped talking, you said, the last statement you said, is I've been dealing with this 45, 50 years of my life.
Yeah.
And that's total dedication. I hear the passion in Paul's voice. I hear the passion in Brother Marcus's voice. But when you say I've dedicated 60 years of my life, that's over half of your existence. You've been fighting for American Africans. You've been striving for Africa to be one Africa.
Yes.
I'm so serious, because it's all or nothing. And what Paul was talking about, Baba Oshi, when I was listening to him, is about sacrifice. And he got frustrated because he said, we have to stop and we have to go ahead and lay and make the sacrifice. We're not going to see liberation, you and I. We're not going to see it totally. I mean, I'm liberated in my mind, but I want my people to
right.
be liberated.
Physically.
You know?
Visibly, yes. Physically, I understand. Yes.
Physically. Mm-hmm. We weren't slaves, like you said. They were attempting to enslave us. Mm-hmm. And how did that work out for you, white people? Because we should all be gone, dead, or either completely slaves. Mm-hmm. But we're not. We're still fighting. But Brother Paul was you got to have a pad and a pen when our listeners start to talk. And I'm serious, all of them, everyone who calls into this show, you need a pad and a pen. Because they say so many things that inspire thought to me, to make me think about things. And I know we don't have time to talk about all of it, but it makes me think. And if this show does nothing else, Baba Oshi, I just want you to start thinking. Use the other part of your brain,
right?
You know, the other 99% of it.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Because this society is set up to where you don't have to think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to think, Baba Oshi. NBC, CBS, CNN, they'll think for me.
That's right.
They'll tell me who to vote for, where to shop, what to eat, what car to drive, what women to have sex with, who to get married to. They'll tell me. All I got to do is ask. Baba Oshi, they had morning shows that used to come on when I was young. I think they still do. That would tell you how to raise your children.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
The lady will come on. You shouldn't beat your kids because your child, just because your kid's having sex with his girlfriend in his room, that don't mean he's doing nothing wrong. And they would say, okay, are you serious? he needs to have his own private space. He needs to pay some mortgage. Come on. Yeah. He should have rights. He should have the keys to your car. No, he shouldn't. I'm telling you, these white folks have you. And then their children turn out for what they do. But see, white kids can fall, Baba Oshi, and they get a second chance. When a black child falls, there is no second chance in this country. They get tried as an adult. Amen? That just means you agree.
Well, that's why that's why Baba Baruti was talking about the problem with spoilage of our children. And we've done that, giving them everything, just as you said, giving you these choices, saying to you, do you think you want to be a girl? You know, and then emphasizing them to, you know, with the effeminization process of trinkets, of goodies, of images, and so forth. So finally, he's like Dwayne Wade's son, you know.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, Dwayne Wade, say, listen, dude, you a baller, you a man, and you're going to be a man. You're born a man, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's the issue here, and it has been. It's just like the Arabs who cut off the testicles of many African men to make them eunuchs, so they could be servants in Saudi Arabia and in Europe, Islamic countries, particularly for the higher ups, so they would not try to mess with the women. You know.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And think about it, Baba Oshi. The guy was saying it. They've done this before. The first thing you saw in Roots was them cutting off the leg, the foot of an African, and they wanted to cut off his penis, but they needed to breed. See, they once they said you can't, slavery is illegal. We got to breed our slaves in house now. So we can't cut his penis off. But what did this psychopath Irugu do when they murdered black men and hung them from trees, Baba Oshi? Mm-hmm. They cut off their genitals. Who does that? When did a genital become a threat to you? Mm-hmm. Because it's psychological. These are psychopaths. And you said something about, what is it, the word you use? Menticide? All these things need to be taught in school so that our children have another point of view and not just the one that's shoved down their throat by Rugu, you know, the whole George Washington didn't tell a lie and all that foolishness. But we don't have another point of view. It's their view or something's wrong with you. I have to be multicultural because this is what this country is heading towards, the blended family. Really? Why are we blended? Why did we integrate socially, Baba Oshi, but we never integrated economically? Why did we integrate religiously, but we never integrated economically? Why are we in the suite, but we ain't in the boardroom?
Right.
Why can Donald Trump run around here acting like he's a billionaire and ain't got to show you no proof? None. No tax returns, no nothing. But yet here comes Kamala, who was a DA. A DA, she would die to put you in jail, and some of you probably need to go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
But why is there so many more of us in jail, but we don't make up that much of the population? Baba Oshi, let's think about the big picture.
40% of us are in jail. 40% are in prison. 40% of us are in jail or in prison. 40%. And yet we only like about less than 15% or 20% of the population.
It's something's wrong with that picture. But the white folks don't have a problem with it because you're showing me a blended family. That means everybody gets pain. That's a lie. That's a lie. That's a lie. Mm-hmm. Privilege. You're born with privilege in this country, whether you take advantage of it or not. If you're too stupid to take advantage of your whiteness, I'm supposed to feel sorry for you because the white folks in Appalachian can't get food stamps. Huh? Stop. The food stamps don't come out of thin air. That's my tax dollars. And why give it to my brother. If my brother needs some, nobody should be going hungry in this country. I can give a damn about all that other stuff. There. Baba Oshi, Brother Paul made a good point, and so did Brother Marcus.
Yeah.
And I think that we as a people have to understand the sacrifice has to be made. My children are going to live better than me. My children are struggling just like I did. And they're going to struggle no matter what I give them. But we're going to make their struggle be one that is constructive. Come on now, Baba Oshi. Don't
struggle, Struggle leads to progress. Without struggle, there's no progress. Frederick Douglass.
There so you go. We got there struggle. You go.
All right, brother.
Let me listen, brother. Right, I'm sorry for cutting in.
Brothers, the close of the program, but I just want to say clearly that I still felt about Paul not, I don't know, you know, because all the stuff that I'm seeing and what the Muslim brother said, and I played that, and I thought that was on point, because basically what he's saying about the British is this is who they are. This is their history. This is who, not just the British, but the Europeans, period. This is their history. This is how they behaved. And this is what they continue to do. And that's what I've always tried to bring to this program, that understanding. So we don't fall for the okey-doke. You know, so we clearly understand what we're up against and all the entities within their society, in this society, all of it. Just like Francis Cress Welsing said and Dr. Neely Fuller, it's in everything they do. It's in all areas of people activity. It's in everything they do. So, brothers and sisters, have a good weekend. Have a safe weekend. Always be on guard. Always. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do it out, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful weekend. Be safe. Shem Hotep, that means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahode means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Have a safe and wonderful weekend, family. Hope to see you on Monday. Peace.